You know, it's happened so often here, Bill, that you guys have won this division. We almost forget to say, hey, congratulations, guys. You won the division, but congratulations. You get the cap and you get the hat, but it's old hat now, isn't it?
Well, it never is. That's your goal at the beginning of the year, to one of them, to, you know, win in the division. We won five games in the division, so, you know, that's good, but we were sitting here 1-2. Nobody was talking about winning the division, I'll tell you that.
So, no, that's a good point.
So, you know, players have worked hard. We played under pressure all year, given the start that we got off to, and they've responded. And thought they responded yesterday when the game was on the line. We had a good defensive plays, big offensive drive, and you know, it was good to see our team perform well at the most critical time in the game. We've had other games where we've done things, and then at the end of the game, haven't played well. But yesterday was probably that was our best football. So. That's good.
Let's talk about that drive. I understand you had a lot of production offensively this year. Had a couple of 50-point games, 49-point game against the Jets. But I would say that was probably the drive of the year yesterday at the end of the game. I mean, all things considered, you make it a two-score game. You make them burn all their timeouts. You chew up over 7 minutes on the clock. I mean, can you imagine a drive going any better than that one did yesterday?
Sure. I mean, that was a big drive at that point in the game. I think the Jet drive at the end of regulation, that was a big one too. And but that's what it's all about. It's about winning, and winning's about making plays at critical points in the game when you have to make them. And at the end of the fourth quarter, those conversions that we made to keep the clock running and to put ourselves in position to kick the field goal to make it a two-score game, that was huge. It was great job by the offense at that point.
What did you see? What did you and Josh see in that game that made you stay with the running game? First half, I think you ran for 10 yards or something like that, and then the second half, he had over 100 yards rushing. What was it that, despite the lack of production on the ground, you said, we're going to stick with this thing?
Well, it's a little bit what we talked about going into the game, but I think the big thing in the first half, one of the big things was just we had some penalties and we were in some long yardage situations and we weren't able to have the opportunity to call as many runs as what we would like to have called. But and then the ones we did call, we didn't do enough with them. So a combination of those things, production and opportunity, when they coincide, when you get first downs and you have more opportunities, when you run well and produce yardage, then that leads to more runs and more first downs and more opportunities and call more runs.
Has your defensive play calling been more aggressive over the last few weeks?
I don't know. I think the big thing we try to do is just look at each game and figure out what we feel like is our best matchup against the opponent and what we need to do to stop them. So we had some pressures called. We had some that we didn't call. We had some three-man rush situations. So I think, you know, part of the game for yesterday was to try to keep them off balance. But, you know, we've been calling some trying to mix in some pressure and I think to try to keep the offense off balance. So we'll probably continue to do that.
Brendan Lloyd is a guy that we all thought you were going to get an awful lot of production out of this year. I think he was targeted one time, and when we do see him catch the ball, he's catching it outside the numbers, 2 feet clearly inbounds, doing exactly what you want him to do in that situation. But we're not seeing him over the middle. We're not seeing him anywhere else. Is there a reason, Bill, that he's not targeted as much as we thought?
Well, I mean, you know, Tom's really got to make those decisions when the ball snapped, what the coverage is, and based on the pass rush and how the coverage declares and all that as to what to do with the ball. So, you know, I'm sure there's – I think he's talked about it, and I don't really have too much to add other than that. You know, everybody's got to try to, you know, do the best they can on the play that's called, and Tom's got to make the best decision he can with the ball in his hands under pressure in a limited amount of time. And so what those are, I mean, they are what they are.
Did you foresee him more involved in the offense than we have seen so far?
You know, I don't really try to have projections for what guys do and don't do and how it all works. I think the big thing you try to do is coach the players, get them to understand the system, and then see how it plays out. And we don't promise players anything. They have to earn whatever playing time or opportunities they get. And then what they do with those opportunities, you just got to make the most of the ones that you have. So think there's, you know, there's opportunities that Brandon's had that he could have made more of. There are opportunities that where we could have got him the ball more than we did. So sometimes that all comes together, and sometimes it doesn't.
It's not just about the stats, but with that said, after the game, Stephen Ridley said he never dreamed that he would be a 1,000-yard rusher. He's over 1,000 yards for the season, and great yards per carry average. Where have you seen the most improvement? Numbers aside, where have you seen the most improvement in Ridley's game from his rookie year to this year?
I'd say in the passing game.
Just, is it picking up the blitz? Or
all it, yeah, all of it. Blitz pickup, ball handling, faking, route running, route spacing, and distribution. I think he, you know, he's come a long way in that area. You know, he's always had good running skills. I don't think that's been an issue, but I think he's run the ball with consistency this year, and he's also had you know, better ball security. And when I say consistency, reading blocks, getting to the right place, getting to the right hole with the right footwork, and letting the blockers do the work and taking advantage of the blocks that he does have. But he runs hard. He breaks tackles. We've seen that. He continues to do that. You know, he's a tough physical runner. He's a hard guy to bring down. He has good balance. But his ball security has improved.
And he didn't have much of that at LSU, did he? I mean, that wasn't part of the makeup of that team and his game in the passing game, was it?
No. And I think our passing game with empty formations and four open formations and things like that is, that definitely adds another element to it. And of course, we see a lot of difficult pressures. Teams like the Jets and even Miami yesterday, Baltimore, teams like that, they give you some exotic pressures, things that move guys around in different spots and identification, and then, of course, actually blocking them. That's a lot tougher than some of the things that he saw when he was in college, no question.
Am I imagining this, or is Vince Wilfork playing better as the year goes along? I know he's played well all year, but
he's having a really good year, Steve. Yeah. I think he's having a really good year, and he's making a lot of big plays. He's he's defeating blockers, he's freeing things up for the linebackers, and he's also giving us great leadership and communication on the defensive line and with the front seven. And he's really doing a good job. It'd be hard to ask much more of him than what he's been able to give us so far this year. He's having a very good year.
All right, I want to get right into Houston, because obviously it's a fascinating team. It's the team right now that's at the top of the conference. And let's start with J.J. Watt, who seems to be a disruptive force. And he seems to be everywhere, and he also seems to be getting his hands on a lot of the passing game in the middle of the in the field. What do you do? How do you deal with a guy like that, Bill?
You're right, Glenn. He's a real disruptive player. He's long. He's got good quickness, good length, and that length is tough on inside players. You know, the guards and centers, and not that he's on the center a lot, but occasionally they slide over and get him, or he gets in on a stunt and that type of thing. But you know, he's so much longer than they are that his length is hard for them to block. He's got good quickness. He's got great timing and instincts as far as being in the passing lane, getting his hands up. I mean, of course, he has long arms, but a lot of guys in the league have long arms. But he has the ability to instinctively get into those passing lanes and get at them. He's got his hands on, I don't know how many, probably batted down 10 or 15 balls this year. And not batted down, batted him up in the air for interceptions and all that. Good pass rusher, strip sack guy. He's certainly on the road to, you know, maybe player of the year.
Is there a tendency for quarterbacks sometimes to alter how they throw the ball because he becomes so disruptive, and at times that can even cause you greater problems?
Well, I think that's a quarterback's, you know, that's something he has to do regardless of who the player is. You can't throw it through those defensive linemen. You just can't throw it through them. You got to find space in there somewhere to throw it around him or throw it over him if you're throwing deeper. But if you've got to throw the ball within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage on the under routes and in cuts and slants and things like that, you got to find space to throw. And, you know, the offensive linemen can't – it's hard for them to move them. I mean, wherever they are is where they are, and quarterback's got to get the ball around them. So whether it's him or anybody else, you can't throw it through them. But, sure, I think he's a guy that, you know, you got to be aware of, and our offensive linemen need to do a good job of keeping him as far away from the quarterback as possible, but also trying to push him out of those throwing lanes. And they do a good job of that. Offensive line's done that well all year, allowed Tom to step up and find clear throwing lanes. So, that'll be important this week.
I'm going to switch gears on you a bit and ask you about the Junior Super Bowl that was played on Saturday, SEC championship game, really best conference in the country, and yet Alabama and Georgia going at it. Nick Saban, obviously a guy you know very well. I know he's a good coach, a smart coach. Why do you think he has been so successful at a number of places in college football? I mean, he's one of the rare coaches who has won an SEC championship at two different schools, and obviously did that on Saturday. What is it about Saban that you can tell us that just makes him stand apart from the competition?
I think Nick really does everything well. I think he's a great football coach on every level. He's technically very good as far as X's and O's and understanding everything that's going on in the field from a technical standpoint, from a teaching standpoint, fundamentals and techniques, schemes, strategy, that kind of thing. I think he's outstanding in that area. He's a very good teacher, both his staff and the players, so he communicates well with them. He's an excellent recruiter. I think that's the one thing about college football, that if you could recruit, you're not limited to one draft choice, number one draft choice. You can go and get 15 number one draft choices if you can get them all to commit. And it looks like he's done that. It looks like he gets about he gets about five or six NFL draft choice, number one draft choices every year, and then he gets about five more the next year, and he gets a bunch of number twos. So, the recruiting's a big part of it. The teaching's a big part of it, and his overall knowledge of the game and the schemes and techniques and everything is outstanding. He's had a lot of coaches with him. And under him, guys like Will Muschamp and guys like that have gone on to be very successful, that have obviously learned a lot from being with him. So he's good. And Mark Richt does a good job too. Georgia, they have a great set of players, and I didn't see the end of the game, but they're within a couple yards of winning.
That's crazy.
The game.
Tremendous. So, wow, what a game.
Yeah, the separation between those two teams is so small. They give a lot of credit to both staffs, both groups of players, and how much more competitive can it be?
Now, when you were in the NFL, let's say 10 years, in the NFL 10 years, 15 years, was it ever a thought of yours, maybe one day I could coach in college football? That would be something that's interesting to me, or has it just been the pros for you all the way and you've never really thought about?
I applied and interviewed for a couple of college jobs and talked when I was with the Giants in the 80s there, and talked about a couple of those. And they didn't work out. I'm probably fortunate they didn't work out. Not that I would have I would have liked the opportunity at that point in time, but
wasn't one of them
things
UConn?
Worked out.
Was one of them UConn?
Was.
Mm-hmm. And who'd they go with?
They hired.
It wasn't Holtz's kid, was
no,
it?
No. Okay. It was. I forget his name.
Where's Mutt when you need him? I bet you Mutt knows.
What's a UConn guy?
I can see him. I just can't. I'm drawing a blank. But in the end, though, those were good experiences because it, maybe think about those situations. Think about the whole, building a program, presenting how you would build a program, hiring coaches, so forth, so on. And that was good preparation for me, as it turned out, with other interviews that I had later on professionally, whether it be with the the Bucks, the Arizona Cardinals, the Raiders, the Cleveland, so forth. So those are good experiences.
The job seems so different, though, the pro coach and the college. You just talked about recruiting. My guess would be that you got to be a good coach on either level to be successful. But don't you have to be just a great recruiter? And almost sometimes that's like kind of a BS artist, to be able to go into the home and convince the kid and his family that you're going to be able to make something special out of this young man.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's, I know there's a lot of talent to that. We run into that, with college free agents or even professional free agents to a degree. Certainly there's money involved, but there's also recruiting involved. But I would say the bigger part of it for me that I think Nick does a tremendous job of, and why he's so successful, is the evaluation. You can go out and recruit guys all you want, but you want to be recruiting the great ones and the best ones. And I think that's what really separates him, is the players he recruits and gets are the good ones. And you say, well, everybody knows who the good ones are, but not really. It's just like there's a lot of number one draft choices that don't end up being great players in the NFL, there's a lot of, you know, top recruits that don't end up being great college players. And I think that's, you know, Nick does a great job on his evaluation, which is difficult because, as you know, high school football is varies from, you know, there are a lot of different levels of it. And, you know, you got guys that are playing against, you know, Division One recruits are playing against players that are nowhere close to that. So there's a great discrepancy in the quality of the play from region to region, but also from one team to another or one player to another.
Plus,
so,
they're 17 or 18-year-old
right,
kids.
Right, you've got to try to project it. So I think that's a big, big part of it. And I know Nick does a great job there, and we've talked a lot about that, about his whole selection process and evaluation process. And of course, he's, you know, done it at the National Football League level as well. So, you know, we talk about some of the differences and similarities. And, you know, he's given me a lot of insight about evaluating college players, you know, as how he sees them develop and what, you know, looking back on it now, having been in the NFL, you know, how he sees college players a little bit differently as a college coach than what he did when he was a professional coach, just because of his extra experience with it. So, it you know, it's an interesting conversation.
Is that a better barometer when you're watching an SEC championship game, and you already said it, there were tons of players that you can see, that kid Jones for Georgia, linebacker, was tremendous. When you look at these players and they're playing against that type of talent, does it make a huge difference in your evaluation process as opposed to when you're watching one of their regular season games and they're playing a team that might have a lot of guys that are going to be businessmen or doctors or, you know, who knows what they're going to be doing the next year?
Sure.
There are a lot of football players that were on that field, the guys that were really playing in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great, you know, a great way to evaluate players is to see them against other NFL players. I mean, they're not all in the league yet, but they're all going to be in the league, you know, that type of thing. You know, one of our, you know, an interesting thing that happened a couple of years ago when we went down to see the great Florida class with Pouncey and Hernandez right. and Tebow and Cooper and Lewis Murphy and Spikes and Cunningham and all those guys. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, it's a dozen guys drafted, Troutwine, that whole group. You know, one of the things that we saw there was in watching Pouncey was Kyle Love. And Kyle Love at Mississippi State playing against Pouncey relative to, you know, some of the other guys that were playing against Pouncey and talking to Pouncey about, you know, how to go this year. And, you know, Mississippi State was tough. And I said, well, you know, it looked like it was tough, you know, playing against. He said, yeah. So, you know, watching good players play against other good players, if they could play against them at Mississippi State and Florida, then they could probably play against them at New England and Miami. You know, and that's so it certainly helps their evaluation. Of course, at the same time, you know, we'll see a player in a couple of weeks. You know, Cecil Shorts, kid from Mount Union.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, there's a guy who probably playing against a bunch of doctors and lawyers and insurance salesmen and everything else.
Kick
and,
their ass,
you know,
too.
Now he's, yeah. So it's a very unscientific process, and that's what makes it so interesting and fascinating. But yeah, there's a lot of good football players at the SEC, and there's a lot of good football players down there, some of whom don't play. You know, we saw the Randall Gay at LSU, who, you know, wasn't even a starter at LSU and had a good career. We saw Matt Castle play behind two Heisman Trophy winners in USC and is a starting quarterback. And so, I mean, you know, there's sometimes the guys just don't get the opportunity at those schools, and then they end up being, you know, legitimate NFL players, and they don't hardly play.
See so. What you made me do here. I've been since you've been looking at me in front of my Tom Jackson or Walt Nadzep. That it?
Tom Jackson.
Tom Jackson.
Yeah, it was Tom Jackson.
Okay, Tom
Sorry.
Jackson.
Yeah, Tom
mm-hmm.
Jackson.
Former UConn coach. Okay, Ben the producer, gets a brownie right. point. There you go.
By the way,
you get a gold star for the day, Ben.
Right on his there forehead. Coach, have you had a chance to talk with Scott Arak about the tragedy down in Kansas City this past weekend?
You know, I've talked to a couple people out there, and, you know, we have pretty close ties to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, some players out there that have been here and also some coaches. And I mean, it's obviously a tough situation. And we expressed our, you know, sent our prayers and thoughts, prayers, and condolences to the entire organization, the players and their families. And, you know, it's a very difficult situation. I think what they did Sunday was just, you know, remarkable. I can't even imagine playing or coaching a game in those kind of circumstances. And, but, you know, they're obviously able to pull together and play well and win. So, but it was, Yeah, that's got to be, you know, off the charts in terms of dealing with, you know, with a rough situation.
Can't even imagine.
I can't either.
Yeah.
You know, Rack trying to pull that team together, and I don't know how you get a team focused. You have to get a team focused every single week. Imagine dealing with that and it being, you know, you're 24 hours removed from it, and you as the coach are one of the people involved out there in the parking lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a terrible situation, but even that being said, I think for the other 31 teams, there's certainly a, you know, a strong ripple effect. I mean, there's some waves there that I think hit our team and hit every team. I mean, I definitely feel like it hit our team because of our, you know, closeness to that organization, if you will, I mean, to a degree. But, I mean, every team had to feel that. I mean, every team's got, you know, players, and every, you know, team's got people that are going through different situations, and their lives aren't perfect, and they're dealing with some type of situation or circumstance, whatever it is. And you know, just really, you never know how bad it is, and unless you're inside that body, you know, who knows what he was dealing with. I'm sure it was terrible.
Bill, congratulations. Another divisional title, 10 in the last 12 years, which is pretty pretty phenomenal record. Good luck Monday night against Houston, and we'll, I would think, see you here on Tuesday.
All right, sounds good.
Can we get some of them T-shirts and hats that your players, I know they won't wear it because they're not satisfied with that. I know there's a bunch of extras hanging around.
They're we'll not going to wear get you one, Steve.
That's right.
Okay.
Steve, Triple X, please.
Steve, they don't have your size.
Shut up. Right. Shut up.
Thanks, Bill.
All right.
Quick break. We're right back at you here on The Big Show.